So today I thought I'd read a little something from a small book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Maybe you've heard of it. Before I start reading the passage and commenting on it, I want to say something about these Dharma talks. Everyone at this temple has a job, and I have a number of jobs, and one of my jobs is giving Dharma talks. And the spirit of giving a Dharma talk is not that different from cooking the rice or cleaning the bathroom. It's something that arises, the time comes, and I have to show up for it. Sometimes I think I know exactly what I'm going to talk about. Other times, I'm not sure. The mechanics are the same. I open my mouth and words come out. But the content may differ from what I imagine in my mind I'm going to talk about. And that's a very interesting practice, and it's not that different from the practice of sitting in zazen. It's not that different from the practice of cooking rice or sweeping the hallway. So I'm giving the talk, and traditionally it's said that a teacher gives a talk to the Buddha on the altar. And of course, what this really means is that the teacher gives the talk to all the Buddhas in the room. And that means that this talk is for you. It's not for you as a collection of historical events and psychological nuances and quirks. It's a talk for you as a Buddha. Because the teaching in our way is that everyone is already a Buddha. And for that reason, during the talk, we sit in zazen posture. We sit as practice with the little addition of listening to words that are meant not for our conceptual minds, but for our Buddha heart. This talk is for you. And maybe you'll understand it and maybe you won't, but your heart will connect with whatever I'm trying to express from my heart. And that's all that matters. So here's Suzuki Roshi talking about one of my favorite pieces of this book, the little chapter called Mind Waves. He says, when you are practicing zazen, do not try to stop your thinking. Let it stop by itself. If something comes into your mind, let it come in and let it go out. It will not stay long. When you try to stop your thinking, it means you are bothered by it. Do not be bothered by anything. It appears as if something comes from outside your mind, but actually it is only the waves of your mind. And later he says that everything is included within your mind is the essence of mind. To experience this is to have religious feeling. Even though waves arise, the essence of your mind is pure. It is just like clear water with a few waves. Actually, water always has waves. Waves are the practice of the water. To speak of waves apart from water or water apart from waves is a delusion. Water and waves are one. Big mind and small mind are one. When you understand your mind in this way, you have some security in your feeling. As your mind does not expect anything from outside, it is always filled. A mind with waves in it is not a disturbed mind, but actually an amplified one. Whatever you experience is an expression of big mind. So I first read these words before I encountered a Zen teacher. So in a way, Suzuki Roshi's book was one of my first Zen teachers. And many of us have encountered the way first through books. When this book was first published, there weren't that many books about Zen. And now, partly thanks to our fellow teacher Josh Bartok, but also burgeoning interest in reading about Buddhism, there are thousands of books. But in those days in English, there weren't that many in the early 1970s. And this book was very meaningful to me, and I took it very seriously. I was speaking with one of you recently who said that he too read the book around the same time that I did and couldn't make any sense of it. But over this past week, I started to read it again, and after many decades of practice, suddenly it makes sense. For me, for some reason, it made sense right away. And I bought into everything Suzuki Roshi said, and that became a little bit of a problem for me. Because Suzuki Roshi, like his ancestor Dogen, will say things and then will say something else that isn't the thing that he just said. And then he'll say something else that isn't either of the two things he just said. And then he'll say a fourth thing. And by then, as we were talking about last night, we've all gotten turned around. It's like, as one of you said, he's put his hands on our shoulders and turned us around, spun us around, and we're a little dizzy. We're a little confused and unsure. This is part of the way of Zen. This is not a way of getting to be a better person or becoming calmer or wiser or kinder, although those things happen as side effects. It's actually to recognize who we really are, which is not who we think we are. It's not the limitations of our history or psychology. It's not even all the things we've learned in our lives. It's this essence nature, which Suzuki Roshi calls in this chapter, Big Mind. This essence nature is who we really are. But it's easy to misunderstand Suzuki Roshi's words, as it is Dogen's words, as it is any Zen teacher's words, because we can only, with language, use the words that are coming out of our mouths, and they're always just pointing in one direction until we change course and point in a different direction, and then another, and then another. The way the mind works, and the way my mind worked when I first encountered this, was I grabbed on to the thing that made the most sense to me and ignored all the other stuff. So one of the things that I really hooked onto was this line, if something comes into your mind, let it come in and let it go out. It will not stay long. When you try to stop your thinking, it means you're bothered by it. Don't be bothered by anything. This was a real problem for me, because I had this expectation that if I did what Suzuki Roshi said, the thoughts would not stay long, and I would no longer be bothered by anything. And I got to tell you, that isn't what happened. So I got into a little bit of a dilemma about it, because if Suzuki Roshi told me to just let thoughts come and go and eventually they would stop and settle down and I would become calmer, then I knew that I must be practicing wrong. And I was convinced of this for many, many years. In fact, this same thought is so rooted in my psychology that I still think I must be practicing wrong. I think it's very human to think about right practice and wrong practice. Very human to hear that if you only do this, then everything will just settle. And we hear the teaching in so many ways. We hear talk about awakening and enlightenment. Even from Dogen, we hear this in the passages we read today during our sutra service. This promise that everything will settle down. And of course, in Dogen's own history, he had a great awakening with his teacher and said the words, body and mind dropped away. And boy, I heard that story the first time and I thought, that's what I want. This body, oh, this mind, such a problem. Even as a young woman, it was a problem, and it's only gotten worse. in the decades. I'm sorry to tell you this, but it just gets worse. And I think some of you know this. The mind creates out of nothing terrible, terrible problems. And we believe them. And the body just keeps disappointing us. I remember reading a book title. I never read the book by Deepak Chopra. And the book title was Perfect Health. And I thought, I should buy that book. I want to have perfect health. And then I stopped myself. Luckily, I had encountered, after reading this book, a Zen teacher. And then another Zen teacher. And then another Zen teacher. And another. And I was so lucky because meeting with Zen teachers personally, I was disabused of the idea that I could, by the force of my willpower and doing it right, end my suffering. There are some passages you can read in books by Buddhist scholars and teachers where it seems to imply that if you do it right, all your suffering will end. But my understanding is not like this. My understanding is that we are engaged in a practice of learning what suffering is. Learning it so thoroughly that we see that it is simply arising and passing away, and that we ourselves can't, through the force of our will, get rid of it. Instead, as we were saying in the last day or two, we learn to bow to it. We learn to acknowledge it, align with it, see that this is how it is right now. And really fully get to know that how it is right now, so that we can perhaps choose wise action from the middle of our suffering. Sometimes wise action is doing nothing, but most of the time, doing is required. There's a Chinese phrase that translates as doing not doing. In popular culture and in some ideas about Buddhism and mindfulness, there is the interesting and very attractive, almost delicious idea that meditation practice is just about being. But being and doing, in my view, are inextricably linked with each other. You can't take one away. You can try. Many of us do a lot without really giving ourselves a chance to be. And once we discover just being, we fall in love with it, and we think that we don't need to do anymore. But it's just a dance. Suzuki Roshi talks about the dance between big mind and little mind. We might say there's the dance between doing and being. There's the dance between the mind being full of thoughts and the mind being less full of thoughts. But Suzuki Roshi is very clear in the second passage that I read that thoughts are like waves in the mind. And if the mind is like water, then waves are a natural part of it. We say, and another teacher says this, that the mind secretes thoughts just like the stomach secretes acid. It's the thing that the mind does. And the mind, in this case, I'm talking about the discursive mind, the intellectual mind. When we talk about the mind-heart, we might also say that the mind-heart is one with thinking. Thinking arises naturally as part of the qualities of being a human being. And everyone, as I've read recently in some interesting literature, but I'm always interested in how people speculate about how minds work. Apparently, everyone thinks differently. You may think that everybody thinks the way you do. I certainly thought that way for a long time. But it turns out that some of us think in words. Some of us actually talk to ourselves. Some of us think in pictures. Some of us think more emotionally or more physically. And it's important to know that that your way of thinking is just your way of thinking. So when you hear the word thoughts, it could mean lots of different things just in this very room. If we were to investigate with each person personally, what is it like when you're thinking? But however thoughts arise, they are like waves in the water of being. And these mind waves are natural. They don't go away. Sometimes the water does get calmer, but we don't do that. We, the small mind, the little one, who is the accumulation of history and psychology, we are not in charge of anything except maybe where we put our attention and what we choose to do in the next moment. And even that, there's some research that we're not in charge of that either. And we say in Buddhism that everything that we do and think and feel, everything that we are, is the result of endless, numberless, an infinite number of causes and conditions, and we can only know a little teeny tiny part of that infinity. So our memory of what led us to be here now and what will happen in the future, all of that is just a very tiny little pinhole view of the enormity of what it means to be human, what it means to be a person who has an awakened heart, but may not know what that awakened heart feels like. And yet, something about this practice touches us. It pulls at our hearts. It pulls us into being in a room where everyone is sitting still. The room that we call the Zendo, which extends all throughout this building, to the parlor and the hallway, to the kitchen, to the snow-covered cars. And then when we leave, because this is the coming and going session, it extends to the highways and our homes and everything we encounter. Everything we encounter, an opportunity for practicing. Practice is not just formal zazen. Zazen is enormous. Zazen encompasses everything we do. There's not a moment when we get a break from it. Even when we're tired, asleep, when we're in pain and distress, when we're watching television or taking a walk or being with our loved ones, that too is an opportunity to wake up to this heart-mind that we call the awakened heart, the Buddha heart, the Buddha nature, present all the time, but not always noticed. And Suzuki Roshi is clear in many of his writings, and I have to say that I'm clear in my life, that this ground of being that we call the awakened heart is just waiting to be acknowledged by us. Always here in its various shapes and forms and tastes and flavors, always here in its various sounds and smells, always manifesting different, so it's hard to say what it is. It's hard to pin it down because it's everything, and everything is always changing, moment after moment after moment. No way to say, I've got it. I vividly remember, and I'm taking a little bit of a gamble here even talking about this, because it would be easy to glom onto it and say, ooh, that sounds good. I want to have some of what she's having. I vividly remember the moment when in my life that was full of various kinds of suffering in the body and the mind, bothersome suffering, suffering that I wanted to go away, and I thought meditation and zazen would do that for me. I remember a moment sitting facing a wall, because with my first teacher, we would not face each other, but we would face a screen or a wall. And I was actually facing a white screen, full of torment. What I like to call the narrator was hard at work, narrating the terribleness of my life. Just everything was terrible. And I won't even go into the details because I don't need to, because you probably have narrators of your own. So you know how the narrator just tells you, this is it. You miserable excuse for a human being. And this world is a miserable excuse for a world. Ugh. And then there was nothing to do. I had reached the bottom of that. I noticed that it was endlessly circling, and I was watching it endlessly circle. It was the same material over and over and over again. Something in me switched. There was truly a turning about in some deep place that I was not even conscious about, and suddenly I saw that screen unfiltered, nothing but the pattern of the cloth. That moment stays with me, although it didn't last. It was a confirmation or an affirmation of all the teachings I've ever heard, including this one from Suzuki Roshi, that underneath all the turmoil, there was something that was not in turmoil. Underneath all of the distress, there was something that was not in distress. And please don't think that this something that I'm talking about is some permanent thing. It's beyond conceptualizing. But in that moment, it met me. I hadn't done anything but sit down with my miserable body and my miserable mind and gave myself over to sitting upright in the middle of all this crap. That's all I did. The Buddha heart, mind, the awakened nature met me. And I recognized it. It had been there forever. And I missed it because I was looking somewhere else. So we say in Zen to not look away, to stay upright in the middle of everything, to recognize that this life is the awakened life. It's not somewhere else. It looks like this. It sounds like this. It feels like this. The conceptual mind doesn't buy it. Fine. The conceptual mind doesn't ever have to buy it. But this knowing of the heart, which is the same as not knowing, which is the same as beginner's mind, which is the same as Buddha nature, this knowing is like meeting an old friend in the marketplace. That greeting of reality to reality, of heart to heart. This is the promise of this practice. It sounds really wonderful, doesn't it? Don't be fooled. Don't listen to this and think, okay, now I know what to do. We don't know what to do. All we can do is take our seat, sit upright, practice as best we can, get lost, get discouraged, get confused, and then come back to practice over and over and over again. So Suzuki Roshi says that everything is included within your mind is the essence of mind. To experience this is to have religious feeling. Whatever you experience is an expression of this. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable, and we'll have our Dharma dialogue.
Thank you for your talk. I remember when I first heard it, what a relief it was, and again, a relief today, when I heard that the goal was not to stop my thoughts. I remember, I don't even remember how old I was, but pretty young, and I remember feeling so overwhelmed by my thoughts that I remember thinking to myself, oh, if I could just have a rest, if I could just flip a switch. I remember even saying those words to myself, if I could just flip a switch and take a break for a little while from this. And, you know, then went on and, of course, read self-help books and all these very, you know, tried all these various strategies. There was no switch to turn off. And when I got to Zen and heard no special state of mind required and not trying to stop thoughts, that was, I was like, say more. because I knew I could finally, a spiritual practice I could do. Right? Oh, really? I'm included in this. You know, my mind too. Right? So such a powerful message.
Thank you.
I think you probably mentioned everything I'm going to say, but I'm kind of seeing like different orientations to thought that he was talking about in there. But one is like there is if you you know don't try to stop the thoughts and they will stop by themselves, and that does refer to something that can sometimes happen. Which is, you know, you mentioned like being versus doing. It might be the being, the feeling that sometimes happens of like no thoughts. And so like he's not lying there. But, you know, I feel like then there's another thing where there are thoughts and you don't know that they're thoughts, you know, and they're carrying you away. And then you realize like, I've been thinking. And then there's like being in thought, which is what I am most of the time, where I'm in thought and I know I'm in thought and I can't get out of it. And then there's like, I guess I'm kind of like playing with and sometimes successfully, sometimes not, but like there's like that going on. And then what if I just take the words, like not take the words out, but let the words be, because sometimes the words just build up in the, and then it's more like energy of, it's more like an energy that feels not really mine, but, and it is more like what I would call waves, rather than, and so that kind of like, you know, I mean, for me personally right now, it's working to kind of say, what is it like if I just don't keep adding the words?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, oh.
Well, and last night I was talking about closing the gap, about being really intimate with something, and this is sort of turning that on its head, that usually we're so identified with the words that we think, if I just add a few more words, it will clarify. I just haven't found the right words. And then there's this moment where there's just a little bit of space, like you see, oh, just words in my head, and we don't have to fight them or do anything, and then nothing has changed. You have not cleared your mind, you have not changed anything, but it's just there, and then we see if this is a kind of energy. Human beings sometimes have minds filled with words. And then what was your miserable problem becomes just, oh, this. Yeah, very well said, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. The theme of this Sashim for for me is bowing. And again, the not wanting thoughts to be there, not wanting to have different thoughts, but the just, for me at least, the meeting them changes everything. I work as a therapist, and so many people complain about racing thoughts, it just won't go away. What can I do to stop it? And so conditioned to resist, to avoid, to escape from difficulty. And this thing that practice that we do, at least for me, only after we've tried everything else. Okay, the turning around, to shining the light on it, looking at it, meeting it, is for me is my practice, and it seems to be, I'm not going to say works, but I don't panic and don't stress out and don't get anxious about this unpleasantness, and that provides me some relief.
And then when we do panic and stress out and worry about it, the same practice applies.
Yes.
Yeah, which is the real gift. So then there's no failure.
And so whatever in the world would be a stumbling block, an obstacle, or as we call it, a dharma, becomes for us a dharma gift.
That's right.
So all of it. And without it, I would just...
be lost in thought constantly, nothing could pull me back to paying attention.
And it reminds me that there's a passage in the New Testament about the stumbling block becomes the foundation of the temple. And I think that's what this is referring to, that if I just didn't have these stumbling blocks, if I just didn't have this mind or these thoughts... But this is the imperfection that that we're talking about the other day, that is the foundation of our life, not the thing we have to get rid of. Thanks.
I was just thinking, speaking of thinking, that just, when people ask me, what are you thinking? All of a sudden, I could have had the most racing thoughts ever, but to find that thought is really difficult. Mm-hmm. That, what are you thinking? And it's that moment where I really get to realize just how much thoughts are, they are like vapor, like you can't hold them. Mm-hmm. And they're not really something you can even verbalize a lot of times. As soon as you're invited to share them, it's like, where are they, And it's that kind of inviting in that we've talked about. And I think... and that is, I'm in the place where I'm leaving soon. Mm-hmm. And I thought about how I should pack up this whole temple and take it away. and just how even for a moment today I had to go in my car and turn my phone on to pay a bill. And I could feel how fast everything was like. It was like, how was I ever here? And that, then that turned to kind of this vapor that I really didn't want. With the thoughts, for me, that's like a nicer thing. That's nice to know that they're vapors. But in something that I want to hold and stuff, all of a sudden, I didn't know. I wasn't quite sure how to find it, And then even when I walked back in here, I was like, what is this place? And so it was really, and then I was back. And I just know that maybe, that's how it will be. I'm okay with that.
So we traverse the many worlds, right? And the chant we did at the beginning of the afternoon yesterday, so you should view this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud. a fleeting lamp, a phantom, and a dream. So this vapor that is our life, this flashing that can never grasp, and yet can rely on. And I think that's what Melissa was talking about. So underneath or in all of the coming and going, everything is manifesting just perfectly. Even the being sucked, you know, in the car, and if it didn't disappear, it would be a big problem, this Buddhism. If we get, if we become Buddhists, I think we're in trouble. That we're human beings, and we're practicing dying again and again, and being reborn. Thank you.
This endless birth and death that we chanted right. about today, yeah. that Dogen talks about, right? Yeah, and it's very tricky. The mind, again, is going to go on even this. This thing that's reliable is not permanent. That's really, it's not permanent in the sense that it always has the same shape or form. So the Dharma gates, like Ray was saying, everything is a Dharma gate. Everything is also a Buddha. So everything we encounter is another shape for this awakened nature. And that's great. If it was just this one little thing, it would be a problem, I think, for us. And you know, my belief is that every human being has these moments of recognition of this thing, this heart-to-heart thing that I was talking about. And that so many human beings make religions around it that solidify it and say, it's this, it's got this name, and this is how you can keep having it again and again and again. In Zen, even in some forms of Buddhism, that's true. In Zen, and I believe this was the original teaching of the Buddha, but that's what a Zen person would say, there's this quality of nothing to rely on, nothing permanent, nothing, and that's what we rely on. You know, no self that stays the same, no universe that stays the same. And if you don't believe that teaching, the instruction is to look for the thing that's permanent, to really just look for it. And if you find it, then you bring it to a teacher and show it. Nobody's ever brought anything like that to me.
A lot of the content of my thinking is about how to be independent or how to help other people be independent. Mm-hmm. And then, even though I don't believe in it, like yesterday, what you said, that there's not such thing as being independent.
Right.
And in one of the chanting in this morning, then how I heard it or how it touched me was like if you devote yourself totally, then who would go out thinking? Who wants to think then?
Right,
it made me laugh and cry and appreciate at the same time, like there's even with my logic, my rational mind, I know it's stupid to think what I'm thinking. So,
right. Another part of your rational mind is thinking that it's stupid to think what you're thinking.
When I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the passage, and this was in my mind when I gave the talk. So just set aside your body and mind. Forget about them. And throw them into the house of Buddha. I love that image.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Throw them into the house of Buddha. Then all is done by Buddha. Very important. We're not doing it.
No.
When you follow this, you are free from birth and death. And become a Buddha without effort or calculation. who then continues to think?
Yeah.
What a great passage, right? That's the whole thing right there. Just memorize that. That's it. That's the thing, by the way. The permanent thing. Yeah, but it really says it, doesn't it? It's just what you... And when I read that, I think, oh, I don't have to do it.
And I can't do it.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's even more important.
I think both you and Jason talk about this place where we're caught by something, and even though we know we're caught, we can't stop it, right? And this is one of the places of practice that is perhaps one of the most difficult, where there's some understanding. So we've been down this dark road before, and we know that this is not a productive road. And yet, there we are, one more time. And we are actually powerless to change. Sometimes we can choose not to go there, but we have to go there. And then it's hard not to feel stupid. You know, like, I should know better. I know better, and still I'm stuck. And this is such an important place to do nothing, right? That we're just bringing awareness. We're just, oh, all right, here I am in the land of where I know I shouldn't be, where I most don't want to be. And how not to panic? Is it possible not to panic? And is it possible not to make it worse? Because that's what we usually do. We start down the road, and then we make it even worse. Not only are we in the place we don't want to be, but we add several more layers onto, well, this means, and da-da-da. But so this, the power of being where we are, and that, you know, even this place, and then in a moment, you know, we hear something, oh, and then we're released. The world changes.
So, maybe last one, Seamus.
In my belly, my mind is exploding. But and I want to ask a question that doesn't involve my mind.
Sorry to laugh.
How can I ask a question that doesn't involve my mind?
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting here for the last while going, what's Buddha? If you ask me, I might try to say some things, but I don't know that I can touch any of that.
Mm.
Or now it's like, if I touch that, how do I know that's my me? So, well, I'm completely lost.
Wow.
Are you?
No, it's most intimate.
I was going to say, are you bragging? but seriously,
I mean, the part of me wants to ask the question as if I was Buddha.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or a teacher.
But you know, you said something that's so important. I'm completely lost. I think that is the core of real practice beginning. You can't conceptualize this, right? I love what you said. How do I know when I touch my knee that that's my knee? You don't know. And Jason said a quote from one of our favorite stories, not knowing is most intimate. You know, we become intimate, but we can't know what that intimacy is.
And this great question, what is Buddha?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. You know, and the question appears differently for each of us, but when we really begin to say, what are they talking about? What is this Buddha? Whose knee is this? Who's walking? Who's breathing? This is the heart yearning, amplifying to meet itself. So stay with the question. Your question is most to the point. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all. Let's sit for another few moments.